This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Sevilla Mann. When Chef Tunde Wei makes you a meal, he wants you to enjoy the food, of course. What's less usual is that Wei, who's based in New Orleans, also wants his diners to think about power, who has it and who doesn't, while they eat. Wei was the keynote speaker at the Michigan Racial Equity in the Food System Summit held at Kalamazoo Valley Community College in April. While in Kalamazoo, Wei told WMUK about some of the pop-up restaurants and events where he's combined cuisine from his native Nigeria with discussions about race, class, and immigration. And he talked about a new business venture that he hopes will lower Kalamazoo's high rate of Black infant mortality. Tunde Wei, welcome to West Southwest.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about some of the ways that you've gotten diners thinking about differences in their privilege while they're dining. One that's been profiled in a number of outlets is the pop-up restaurant you had in New Orleans, and I think there was another one in Hamtramck. Is that right?
No. I used to own a restaurant in Hamtramck years before I did the pop-up in New Orleans.
Okay, so it was just the pop-up in New Orleans?
Yeah, it's a pop-up in New Orleans, and then a food truck in Ann Arbor and a dinner in Detroit. That was all in the same sort of series.
The idea with these meals was that white customers were asked to pay more for a meal than non-white customers?
Yes.
And so why ask white customers to pay more?
To make a point, you know, to make more concrete what the cost of living is for folks of color, what the price of food, what the price of housing, what the price of healthcare, what the price of living is if you are not white, if you don't have privileges that are, you know, sometimes described as intangible, but often and actually manifest in tangible benefits. So that was the idea behind it, to show what some people know intellectually, and to make concrete in a moment what those differences look like.
And so how did this actually play out? Customers would come up and order their food, and then you would get into a discussion, I imagine.
Exactly. So yeah, folks came up. I made sure that they wanted to eat, and then if they said yes, and I told them why I was there to talk about racial wealth and wage disparity. And I mostly had them speak. I mostly asked them questions about what they understood about privilege, and specifically the earning power of white folks relative to Black folks and other people of color. And once they had given me their response, once they had told me what they felt about it, and most people, you know, understood the history of this country and how that has shaped the difference in wealth and opportunities for white people. So they knew this. And once we had agreed that, you know, that wealth disparity based on race was true, then I asked them if they wanted to pay more as a way for them to not just acknowledge the reality, but support it with their actions. So that was sort of how it went.
And so once you got to that point of making the request, what kind of response did you get? Was it like mostly one way or another?
So I'm talking about the white folks who I asked now. They, I think 80% of them decided to pay the extra. But just to put this in context, I wasn't asking for a lot of money. Lunch was $12. And I asked white folks if they wanted to pay 2.5 times more. That's $30. And so while it was unexpected, you know, when folks came to the store, they weren't expecting to pay 2.5 times more for lunch. It wasn't unreasonable. You know, there are places where you could get a lunch for $30. And so when you know, couple that with the idea that there was an experience that I was providing, you know, having this conversation, the realization for me, or the takeaway, wasn't that the white folks who had come to my store were necessarily more interested in solving disparity. It was that the concessions that they were making at the time weren't such that they couldn't make it. There wasn't a sacrifice in that space. And the reason why I bring that up is because a lot of my work is demonstrative. It's to show and highlight what the challenges are. It's to more forcefully identify the contours that separate us. But for us to really change things, you know, for us to move from understanding what the problem is to seeking solutions that are potentially transformative, we need to make sacrifices. And the we that I'm talking about are the folks who have power.
You mentioned that in this case with the restaurant or serving situation where after a conversation you asked white customers to pay more, and many of them did agree to do that. You said that you found that there wasn't a sacrifice on their part because this 2.5 times price difference was something that they could afford to do. In that sense then, if there wasn't a sacrifice, do you feel the project was successful?
Personally, for me, it was. At least people know the project. And yeah, so for me it was, but no. On a larger, more transformative sort of like plane, I don't think so. I think maybe it has been inspirational to folks, but I don't think it was successful, at least not the sort of success that I think is necessary relative to the problems and challenges that exist.
Did you feel that there was demonstrative value in that project?
Yeah, I felt so. I mean, I felt like I made the case, you know, but that doesn't mean much, you know. That is sort of like an intellectual victory. But the system and the world that we live in is, you know, pretends to be intellectual, suggests that common sense is the rule, but none of that is true. What is mostly true is that we are interested in preserving power and privilege, and we are ruled by our passions to make what we have continue to be what we have. So yeah, even if I made the point, the larger point that I think I was making, which invalidates the first point, is that nothing is changing or nothing will change until we make real sacrifices.
Maybe this is more than we can cover in this interview, but do you have an idea for how to get there, how to do that?
I have many ideas. I think that the current project that I'm working on is part of the evolution of my thinking from that pop-up stall that I did. And, you know, along with demonstrating what the problem is, my work now is as much as possible trying to extract as much concessions, trying to challenge the folks that I engage. And when I say folks in power, I'm specifically talking about, just to put a fine point on it, about white folks, but specifically white folks who are middle class and better. And also...
And better?
Yeah, so middle class and upper middle class.
Middle class and up, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also folks who just have class privilege in general. Because a lot of the work that I'm focused on is economic transformation. Because of the way our system is, I think if you have economic security, you have more freedom. So the current work that I'm doing, I think, is a step in that direction. Is how do we transform the economies and financial fortunes of folks who have been unfortunately dispossessed? And so this is about transferring our resources. I don't think that if you were able to create a circumstance where, you know, folks who were previously disinvested in or dispossessed were somehow given money or resources, that would change or end racism or end sexism or end any sort of exploitative ideology. But what I do think is true is that is the beginning, you know, that we can't attempt to get to where we are going unless we address this. So all that was a long-winded way of saying that the current project that I'm working on is about transforming the economic and maternal health of Black women and the communities that they live in. I'm starting a company, and the company is going to sell prepackaged food products. And all the revenue that we get from the sales will go to funding interventions led by Black women to address Black infant death. I want to grow this company to viability. And when the company is viable, I'm going to transfer the ownership of the company to Black women. The challenge that I'm issuing to this community is for the institutions that are here to support this company. and that they should take an inventory of their current vendor list and their business and see how many of their vendors are Black women. I want the company that I'm starting to capture at least 15% of the net food spend of the large institutions in this community. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars that can be controlled by Black women, that can be controlled and spent and have an impact in the communities that Black women live. And if we are talking about lowering the rate of Black infant death here, I think this is a critical step that has to be taken. While we are taking steps to transform the health systems, which is happening, I think we have to look at the other social determinants of health, of which income and wealth are a big part.
This would be the Baby Zeus project.
Yes, Baby Zeus.
I understand also from the Department of Health and Human Services that nationwide the rate is about 2 times higher than that for non-Hispanic white babies. So it's not just Kalamazoo. This is a nationwide issue.
Yeah, it is. But I'm starting here. I'm hoping that it expands. This project isn't about helping Black women. I don't think Black women need help. I think that it's about just saying what the truth is, that, you know, Black women have been devalued, undervalued, continue to be for the most part, and they continue to create, you know, amazing things despite all this. And I think the opportunity, not just to transform the Black community, and not just to transform the fortunes of Black women, but really the entire city and area is within reach if we invest in Black women. There's so much potential for what this, there's so much greater potential for what this area could be if we make the right investments. I think the returns will be exponential.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. We're having a conversation with New Orleans-based chef and activist Tunde Wei. Just to make sure I understand the mechanics of this here, is it the investment in the talents and the resources of Black women that you see as leading to lower Black infant mortality, or is it more that this will generate revenue that could then go toward projects that would address that issue?
It's twofold, right? So the business, the net profit from the business would go towards funding interventions led by Black women, excuse me, to address the issue, because I feel like Black women have the answers because Black women are closest to the experience. On the operational side, the business will be run by Black women. Now, I am incubating the business because I don't want to encumber Black women with a business that may not be successful. I think to the extent that institutions in the Kalamazoo area recognize their responsibility is will go a long way in determining how successful this project is. I think that a lot of institutions are invested, in fact, not a lot of, all of them are invested in the status quo. So I'm calling out the health systems, I'm calling out the universities, I'm calling out the school systems. All of the folks who hold institutional power and manage resources, whether it's financial capital or other kinds of currency, those folks are invested in the status quo. They're invested in preserving a hierarchy that keeps Black women at the bottom. And so for this business to be successful, institutions in Kalamazoo have to reorient themselves in a fundamentally different way. We can't say that we want things to change but not change. Either we're lying or we don't know what we're saying. And so this enterprise is an opportunity to not to argue, not to bicker, but to say that if you say you want to transform the community, if you say that you want to invest in the health of Black women and Black babies, then what are you doing from an economic perspective? And if you want to do something, here is a vehicle. We are selling prepackaged food. We are selling applesauce as the first product. You know, we know that hospitals and school districts and almost everybody uses that product. Are you willing to investigate looking at what it would mean to buy that product from a business that supports Black women? And so if we're able to capture some of this spending and we're able to transfer that wealth directly to Black women, then yes, I think that sort of injection of capital and wealth into the community will in fact reduce Black infant death.
And is this business going to be based in Kalamazoo?
It depends on what you mean by based. The production of the applesauce will be done in the Kalamazoo County. Our apples that we use will be from the Michigan area. The women that will be running the business and also owning the business initially will also come from the area.
Do you have an idea of when that's kicking off?
We're in talks with a couple of large institutions here. And one of them has signaled an intent to have us supply their applesauce. And so we're just waiting to sign papers. So I don't know, that could take a week, it could take a month. But hopefully within the month, we should start production. There's a second part to this. I think that we need institutional accountability as well as individual. And what we're doing is we're also recruiting sales associates to sell our products in their communities. We are offering a starter pack of 100 4-ounce packs of the applesauce. And the idea is that you purchase the applesauce or this starter pack through our website, and then you go into your community and you sell the applesauce, and over or through that sale, you have a conversation about systemic racism in your community. So we are especially targeting white folks to go into their communities with the applesauce and do the work of talking to their friends, their family, their coworkers about the issue, about systemic racism and about what individual responsibility looks like. And if you sell two of the packs a week, over a year you would have exhausted your supply, and you would have had about 100 conversations. And that the money that we get from our resellers also goes to the business as this second revenue stream. So the wholesale institutional business and the sort of like multi-level marketing business are the two revenue streams that we are going to employ for the business as a way to mimic the way that institutional racism plays out. You know, it plays out on the institutional level and also the interpersonal level.
You had a project that focused on immigration or that folded that in recently. This was the Marriage Trumps All dinner, which sounded like a romantic meal, even if it was dealing with some pretty serious issues. But I'm not sure I entirely understand the concept. The way I read it, this was some kind of a matchmaking dinner where you're trying to make the conditions right for U.S. citizens to maybe fall in love with people from other countries. Am I butchering that?
No, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I think that I wanted to have fun. I wanted folks to have fun, but I also wanted to be serious about the reality of what it means to be an immigrant in America. And just to be sure, there are different kinds of immigrants, not just whether you're documented or undocumented. Depending on where you're from, what country you are from, you are treated differently. And so the point that I was making, the soft point that I was making is that, you know, love, the institution of love, or the reality of love as a sort of like a social institution, and marriage as the sort of like terminus of that, has been transformational in the history of the United States. So when you look at, say, the Loving case, which...
Loving versus Virginia.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even know it was Virginia.
I think that's right. That was the case that went to the Supreme Court that overturned, I think, state bans on interracial marriage.
Exactly. And also when the Defense of Marriage Act was struck down.
Which made it legal for gay couples to get married.
Exactly. I think the idea of love and marriage as really a tool or a representation of privilege means that we can use love and marriage as a way to extend who we define as American, who we define as human, really. And so this project was about that. It was about saying that we could have who we love really represent our politics, and that the arbitrary demarcation between immigrant and U.S. citizen bodies could disintegrate in a sense if two people happen to fall in love. The idea, you know, in the name was Marriage Trumps All, is that, you know, if you fell in love, maybe you would get married, and that could create opportunities for people to enjoy the privilege of U.S. citizenship. But it's bigger than marriage, you know, and it's beyond marriage. It's about refuting on an individual and interpersonal scale all these differences that have been erected between folks. And so when we had the dinner in Pittsburgh, it was a fun time. People who were U.S. citizens and immigrants got together, and they ate and they laughed, and, you know, there were some romantic sparks, and it was good. And I plan on hosting more. And actually the name has changed. The name has changed to reflect sort of like the change in my idea. And it's now Love Will Trump. And it's really about love for the night, love for the week. I don't know how long people want to keep the love for, but as much as possible, creating love. I personally don't think that in a specifically political configuration that love is that powerful. You know, I think that love can be co-opted by politics, but I think it's fun to play with love and to see how it can be transformative and how it can sort of push back against these other institutions, like the legal and the political institutions, that are really rigid and discriminatory.
Tunde Wei, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Tunde Wei is a chef and activist based in New Orleans. He spoke with WMUK in April when he was the keynote speaker at the Racial Equity in the Food System Summit. You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and by searching podcasts in Google Music. For WMUK, I'm Sevilla Mann.